Hello!
Hello! And welcome to the Comic Cast.
That kid from The Simpsons.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to the Comic Cast. I'm Craig.
And I'm Liam.
And we're here with the Comic Cast, Ireland's number one comic book podcast. I'm Craig.
I'm Liam. We just did this. Why are we stuck in some sort of loop?
I felt the evening was going that way. How are you, sir?
I'm good.
You're looking well. You've been working out?
I have.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What's new?
At the gym of life.
Yeah, sure. We're here with an extra special episode of the Comic Guys.
Can I tell you why it's extra special?
Because you've got an interview.
I was going to say, because I haven't read any comics.
Oh, yeah.
So it's going to make it special in that.
Sure.
How we get around that?
It's only been a month since our last podcast. It's not like you've had enough time. Who's the interview we have lined up today?
We have an interview with the organizer of Squarebound, the Irish Comics Creators Convention, that's coming up this Saturday, Pádraic O'Maloid.
Sure. Good stuff. He's a good guy. I've got some comics I'm going to review, and then I've got some movies I've seen that you haven't seen. And then I've got some news which you haven't heard about yet. So really, this is going to be the Craig show.
Well, I'll use my expert interviewing skills to keep you on track.
Okay, do that.
You know what I mean? Keep you from waffling.
Should we get on with it?
What you been reading?
What have I been reading? That is an excellent question, Liam. What have I been reading? No, first thing I've been reading here is Flashpoint. The latest sort of crossover comic from DC, written by Geoff Johns. Drawn by Sir Andy Kubert. This is a...
Is he actually a sir?
In my mind. And in the minds of many people, he should be knighted. But no, I don't think the Queen is recognizing him for his work on DC Comics just yet. I haven't read a DC comic in months. So I just sort of gave up on DC around... about a year ago at this stage. Just because... I don't really know why. I quite like DC Comics, but I just, I don't know. I actually have no idea. I just stopped, and then it was hard to get back in. And as you know, there's the big DC renumbering thing happening, which we'll talk about later. So this is the event that leads directly into that. So I was like, okay, this is a great time to jump back in, see what I've missed. And to be honest, I have to spoil the first issue of this 5-issue thing, but because... I could see in your eyes you don't want to read this comic until nobody does. Nobody I've ever spoken about it. Well, not nobody. I'm sure many DC fans are, but generally people are like, no, I'm not going to read a DC crossover event. Well, let me tell you this, sir. This is sort of an alternate timeline thing, which is, you know, something Craig loves, where characters are different. And in this timeline, Batman is Thomas Wayne, Bruce Wayne's dad. And Bruce Wayne was murdered in the alley. So now he's just like a vigilante who just kills criminals. He has no time for him. He just like pushes them off buildings, you know, whatever. He's just out for revenge because he's hurting so much over his son and wife's murder.
That's great.
It's such a good concept. They really should just make a whole comic book on that. Fuck, Batman is so shit. I used to love Batman until I realized, oh, he could be really cool instead of kill people. That's a great idea. But anyway, it isn't just about Batman. I guess the main thing here is the Reverse Flash, who is the Flash's enemy, has created some sort of alternate timeline. And so Barry Allen, the Flash, is in this new world where his mum is still alive and his dad is dead. Apparently, the Flash's dad is dead. Or the other way around. His mum is dead in the real world, or in the regular universe. I'm not familiar with the Flash. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no, I'll throw it out there. I don't like the Flash that much. But in this universe, Barry Allen, the Flash, is no longer the Flash. He doesn't have his powers. Which this is a pretty funny scene where he's like, oh, I better, you know, go run off and say things he needs. So he runs off a stairs and he's about to go, you know, take his suit out of his ring. But then nothing happens. He just falls on the stairs. So it's pretty cool. So, yeah, like the main sort of, again, I won't spoil any more than that Batman thing. But the main thing here is Barry Allen going around sort of meeting... seeing how everyone is different in this universe. Wonder Woman's quite evil, you know, and some big bad guys are actually good guys in this universe and so on. So all that stuff's really good. And as someone who's not too familiar with DC Comics, especially recent DC Comics, as I mentioned, I didn't have any trouble sort of, you know, getting through it or whatever, or knowing, you know, figuring out who the characters were and stuff. So it's really well drawn, obviously, by Sir. Andy Kubert, who absolutely is an amazing artist anyway. I don't really know what I could say about him that hasn't been said already, but it's brilliant. The interesting thing here, I guess, is leading into the DC renumbering, the relaunch of all the books, I don't think too much has been said yet about what the relaunch means story-wise, but as a guess, you know, this is an alternate universe. I guess this is going to be a bit like House of M, maybe, where at the end Barry Allen changes stuff back, but not quite 100% back, and that'll create this sort of new status quo for all the comic books. That's just a guess. You'll have to wait and see. Sorry, only the first two issues of this comic are out as at the time of recording, so I don't know how it ends. But I've probably just spoiled it for you with my guesstimations there. So yeah, I'm actually really enjoying this. I definitely recommend picking it up, especially if you're in any way interested in the DC relaunch coming this September. So yeah, Flashpoint. Two thumbs up from Craig. What have you been reading? Oh, sorry, you're going to say something.
No, I was just going to say about the DC thing. Who do you think it's aimed at? Do you think it's aimed at, like, getting new people in to read comics?
I think that's partially it, but I think it's more about just getting people, comic readers, even like people like me, lapsed DC readers who haven't been keeping up, because DC sales have been falling. Like, it's literally like comics, they're like Batman comics are selling half what they were like a year or 2 years ago. So I think it's just trying to get people back in, a good starting point. And it is because Marvel stuff do it occasionally where they'll have a new number one for Spider-Man or something.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's ever been done where it's like a company-wide relaunch of every comic book. So that's pretty cool, and it's and I guess it might encourage people to pick up comic, especially characters they've never read before. I'm definitely interested in a few or something like The Flash. Like, I don't know anything about The Flash, you know, but maybe here's a new number one. I'll jump in. Maybe I probably won't. I don't like the buzz. it's definitely weird. Although, like, the amount of buzz they're getting out of it, it's definitely going to work in the short term. It remains to be seen in the long term if it'll have any sort of sustained thing. But we'll get into that a bit more. You haven't been reading anything. This is my second comic of the month. Astonishing Spider-Man and Wolverine. Liam rolls his eyes for the listeners who can't see. Written by Jason Aaron and drawn by Sir Adam Kubert, his brother. and his brother. There's a theme in the comics this week. Astonishing Spider-Man and Wolverine is a sort of a set outside continuity, the idea being that anyone can sort of pick up this miniseries and read it. Now, it doesn't really need to know anything about current Spider-Man and Wolverine stories. It starts off in the Cretaceous era with dinosaurs. Spider-Man has a huge beard, and he's got a makeshift telescope, and he's talking about how tomorrow he's going to die. And Wolverine is living with these sort of ape men of the period, and Spider-Man keeps going over and sort of saying, like, you know, you're going to fuck up the future here by teaching these people how to survive. And what it turns out, is that it's the day before the meteor hits the Earth to kill all the dinosaurs and stuff. So they're stuck there. And then it sort of flashes back to find out where... how they got there, and basically there's this this dude, the Orb, who's a villain. I think he's new. I've never seen him before. Who's just his face is just a big eye, and he sort of sends them back in time. So they're stuck there. Although I guess again, out of these six issues, I'm going to spoil the first issue because I feel like the first issue is premise and setup rather than the story. They get back to modern day. But because of Wolverine's traipsing around with the ape men, everything's changed, and now there's like a big robot dinosaur, and these ape men survived the meteor, and they've risen up and killed all the humans, and so they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Is a sort of phrase I could use to describe the situation Spider-Man and Wolverine find themselves in. Part of me really like this. Like, it's just crazy. Like, that's just the first issue. They go to multiple timelines every issue. Well, there's a bit where they're fighting, like, and they're actually fighting a planet that's trying to kill them. It's completely out there. It's like a weird Grant Morrison comic or something. And definitely, I don't want to spoil it, because definitely the fun in this comic is just seeing where they go, how they got there, what's different, and in particular who's behind it, what's going on. But when I was reading this, though, by about issue four, I was kind of getting bored with it. I was like, it was the art again. But Adam Kubert is also a very good artist. He's done some of my favorite books, actually, comic books of recent years. And so it's probably worth reading for the art. And then, the again, definitely not to spoil, but the last issue is amazing. Like, you think it's all kind of, oh, this is our, it's, although it's crazy, it's kind of standard enough stuff. But then the last issue has a sort of a big sucker punch of an ending that, yeah, that's sort of a meta commentary on comics in general, and it was kind of sweet. Okay. and very, very interesting, so it's definitely worth sticking with. Okay. Mixed opinions, but by the end I really liked it. It's definitely something that's going to stick with me for a day or two. Yeah. Anyway,
it does, it sounds interesting.
Anytime
it grabs me.
Anytime there's timelines and multiple timelines and different versions of people, I'm on board for that. There's actually a really good twist thing where Spider-Man gets to see a moment from Wolverine's past that lets him understand Wolverine correct better, and Wolverine sees sort of Spider-Man and Uncle Ben, how Uncle Ben died, and obviously didn't know that. He gets to experience it in a sort of weird way. So yeah, just cool. A really cool comic actually. Right. I really liked it. And the final comic I've reviewed, Paying for It by Chester Brown, which you recommended I should read, despite I've never read it yourself.
I'm a big fan of Chester Brown. Yeah, I've been waiting for this book for ages.
Sure. Yeah. It covers quite a long period. Is it how long it's been since you released a comic? It covers like about 15 years from the mid-90s onwards.
Well, his other books that we reviewed by him on the show, like one was kind of about his childhood.
Sure.
And one was an experience with like a girlfriend and stuff.
Sure. So now that I've said it, I definitely it isn't, because he talks about his Louis Real comic at the writing.
Oh, that one
it,
as well. Yeah, yeah,
writing of it in this. So obviously it's over that time period that he's covered. So he obviously has released something in this period. But anyway, the point is, sorry, I've gone off point. The story of this, I guess, is sort of an autobiographical book from Chester about his relationship with a load of prostitutes. Interestingly, in the back of the book he says he didn't like the title Paying for It. It was kind of forced on him by the publishers because he felt like it has a double meaning. Meaning one, obviously, that he's paying for sex, but two, that he's paying for it emotionally, or you know, there's some sort of thing. And he's like, I don't agree with that. Like, at the end of this book, he's like prostitutes are great. It's sort of the summary.
That's brilliant.
This is an absolutely fucking amazing book. Basically, it starts off, he's with his girlfriend, Sukin. He's living with her, and she comes in and says that she wants to start seeing some other guy, and does he mind? He's like, not really, no. Brilliantly, he draws himself with this, just sort of a straight line for his mouth in every panel, like for the whole book, so he never shows any emotion whatsoever. You're never really sure what he's thinking. Usually, it looks like indifference to pretty much everything, which is amazing. His girlfriend comes in, he's like, yeah, I want to start seeing someone else. He's like, oh, that's fine. Do you want to move out? She's like, no. No, it's fine, you can stay here. So he's living in this house with his girlfriend and her new boyfriend, and he realizes this is so much better than when he was going out with her, because he's listening to them arguing in the next room and stuff, and he's like, oh, I'm so glad I don't have to deal with that anymore. So, but he still gets to like watch movies with her on the couch and stuff, so he's like, this is the best situation, except there's no sex. So he decides to start going to prostitutes, and and this is great, because he's like exactly how I think you or me would be if we went for prostitutes, just really nervous, like he's calling up but he's not really sure what to say or what to ask for. Then he goes into a hotel room or to meet one of the prostitutes, and she's like, oh, I'll be back in a minute. So he looks under the bed and in all the doors to make sure there's not a pimp there waiting to kill him. And then, you know, he has sex or whatever, and he ejaculates very quickly. So then he realizes he should masturbate before he goes to see a prostitute ever again, so he doesn't come too quickly. So it's just full of real sort of a really honest sort of telling of this situation. Really funny. Joe Madden and Seth are in it quite a bit. They're actually excellent. They're like almost like a bro-com trio, where bro-com would being the sort of rom-com for yeah, dudes, where Chester's sort of the regular dude, Seth is like the voice of reason telling him, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, and Joe Matt's sort of the comic relief, where he's just like, he's really angry that like Joe Matt hasn't had sex in ages, and then Chester Brown, he's like, you skipped a line, like I was the one who's meant to have sex next, not you, and he's like, oh no, I've moved into the pay for sex line, which goes much faster. So yeah, really funny. It's really long, it's about 300 pages long, and full of good stuff. I'd really recommend it. There was one thing that sort of annoyed me about it, which was that at the end of the book, I definitely won't spoil the ending. Although I would like to come back maybe when you've read and talk about the ending.
Yeah, I'll read it and I have it on order. So sure. Maybe we'll
have a deeper discussion
on it.
But the last 50 pages of the book are just sort of text about the legal why prostitution should be legalized. Like Tessa Brown's thoughts on it.
And it's just an essay.
Yeah, it is. It's like an appendix. Like at the end, it says. Seth wanted to write a few words about his thing in it, so his stuff is in appendix 23. It was like appendix 23, what the fuck. So the appendixes 1 through 22 are just thoughts about why prostitution should be legalized. I to be honest, I couldn't bring myself to read it all. I wasn't I wasn't that interested at the end of the sort of legality of it. One thing from flicking through it as I was getting to the Seth index or appendix, he said was that all arguments against prostitution fail if you agree that men also are prostitutes. There's also men prostitutes. That all arguments that it doesn't work for men prostitutes. It's only about women prostitutes. And I guess that I thought that was kind of interesting. But I don't really care about prostitution enough to really care about the legality of it as a service I only rarely use myself. So I would highly recommend this book. It really I was really impressed with it.
Excellent.
Yeah, so do you want to talk about Paul Hornschmeier's book?
Yes.
Hornschmeier, Paul Hornschmeier.
Paul Hornschmeier.
Yeah, Hornschmeier.
Who we talked to on the last show, and his new book,
Life with Mr. Dangerous. Which I keep calling Life with Mr. Wonderful.
Yes. Yeah.
Even on the interview. Or almost in the interview. Maybe you don't want to talk about it.
I just forgot about it.
Sure.
It's a brilliant book.
Set it up for me. Tell me the premise there.
Well, it's about this kind of 28-year-old something, 20-something, who's, going through, her... She's having trouble with her... boyfriend, and she's kind of in love with her best friend.
Sure.
And
but she's not sure if he's in love with her.
Yeah. It just seems like I certainly don't encounter stories about late 20 somethings a lot, but I think this really fits it.
Sure.
It's really like they still seem, kind of foolish and childish. But yet, becoming a proper adult where, you're looking after your own place, you're trying to have your own life, but it's still only starting out.
Sure.
And you're still, having these awful problems with relationships. I loved it. I thought it was great.
It blew me away, actually. I wasn't expecting it to be as good as it was, almost. And I'm not really sure why that is, because I like Paul Hornschmeier's work quite a bit. But yeah, absolutely, I agree with everything you said. I'm interested, and sort of a girl's perspective on it. We meant to ask him an interview, and never did. Like, how difficult, or was it difficult to write authentic sort of female dialogue? Because the character, I can't remember her name, Amy, is it?
Yeah, I think it is. Amy.
That is in pretty much every panel, and a lot of sort of internal thoughts and stuff. So yeah, I agree. I related to it quite a bit. I thought it was an amazing piece of work. I think everyone should buy the ultra limited edition for $600 or whatever it is.
Is that it's $400?
Yeah, yeah. It's totally worth that.
It's totally worth it. You get the book. You get an original page from the book. You get some other stuff.
Did you choose what page you got?
I did. Yeah. Paul asked. So I'm not sure if that's available to everyone.
No, I'm just curious what page you picked.
But I still won't know if it's until I get it.
Sure, okay. Good stuff. Okay, so definitely check that out. So pretty much every comic we've mentioned today you should check out if you've got the money. I know it's a recession and all that, so don't worry about it.
Sometimes I feel like that doing this podcast is ruining my life because... every month I need to buy new comic books to review, and they're really expensive.
Yeah, I know, yeah. They should do something about that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if I wasn't doing this podcast, I'd be through with comic books.
Anyway, on that note, we should probably go to the interview with Porrigo O'Mellod.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to pronounce his second name.
Yeah.
But anyway, I met up with him to talk about Squarebound, and this is what he told me.
Okay, Squarebound is it's a little event showcasing Irish comics, by which I mean people who are writing and drawing their own comics and some of the stuff that's more commercial that has made it into the bookshops and things like that, as opposed to the kind of the small press type of things that people tend to produce themselves, and also maybe people from Ireland who have kind of broken out further afield. So, and one of the things, the reason this came about is there's a number of events like this, let's say in the UK and abroad and elsewhere, and there's really nothing like that here. And I felt there needed to be something for the people who were actually doing stuff themselves, rather than it being kind of imported guests who are working in at the American end of things, let's say, for instance. And in the meantime, I've been talking to a man called Jack Hart, who runs the Irish Writers' Centre on Parnell Square. And a number of years ago, they had all their funding withdrawn by the Arts Council, because the Arts Council was withdrawing everyone's funding, essentially. And they had wanted to... Somebody put me in touch with them, and them in touch with me, and they were looking for ideas to do things, to get things in the Writers' Centre. And they also wanted to kind of have a certain amount of outreach from the Writers' Centre, because there is a kind of this idea in people's heads that it's Guatemalan lady poetesses with one leg and a bad eye and all this kind of image about the Irish Writers' Centre. And they also wanted to try and kind of break out from that and see that is... I think that anyone that writes and reads, it should be a resource for. And so between one thing and another, I said, well, the venue is there and I'd like to do this. And I kind of went, I'll give it a go. And normally when I run events and I run science fiction conventions, there's one coming to March, folks. But we won't talk about that. And I like to kind of take a year's run at it. But I ran, this one is on something like a 3-month run, which means I kind of, as far as I'm concerned, I'm kind of running at a bald-headed kind of, and I'd like to have had a bit more time. But so the idea is that the Irish Writers' Centre has several lots of floors. It's an old Georgian house on the first floor above the ground floor. I will have tables for people who want to display and sell their wares and indeed anything else. I think the people from Octocon, which is the science fiction convention in October here in Dublin, are taking a table just to highlight themselves and things like that as well, which is great, because I think anything that people are interested in like that, that's, you know, people can go to, I'm all in favour of. And so there are various small press people there, and not so small press. And upstairs then there's a panel room, at least one panel room, if people wanted a workshop room or something like that, that's always possible, but we will see what happens. The good thing is the Irish Writers' Centre has floors and floors and rooms and rooms and rooms, and things can be done. And certainly going into the future, one of the other things is I want to move forward with this, I think hopefully turn it into an annual event. If this one doesn't fall completely flat on its face, then next year is definitely going to go, and hopefully it'll grow. I mean, I've seen these things happen in the UK where they have grown and grown and grown. And I think that the people are there, the creators and the comics people, and I think this should grow in itself. And yes, so I did want to mention who is coming along as actual guests, the people who will be in the room doing the panels. First of all, there's Jerry Hunt, who is probably the most successful Irish comics creator in a way. Jerry is fascinating. When he retired, he was an architect, and he retired, and he'd always loved comics, and he decided he'd give it a go, and he started off by producing a thing called In Dublin City, which he wrote and drew and had photocopied and all himself, and turned up in the Dublin comic shops in Sub City and Forbidden Planet and other ones that no longer exist. And between one thing and another, this came to various people's attention as these things moved along. Eventually, O'Brien Press, last year, the year before last, published Blood Upon the Rose, his 1916 graphic novel, which sold in huge quantities, apparently, for, you know, an Irish graphic novel. I mean, in many ways it was. Lots of people have kind of self-produced their own stuff, but this was the first mainstream, you know, bookshop, ground-level Irish publisher that decided to dip their toe in the water. I mean, I've always felt that whoever did the 1916 graphic novel, unless they made a complete hames of it, were going to be onto a good thing. But it was Jerry, and it was great because Jerry's a good guy, and he's one of the great things about Jerry as an architect, all the buildings are fantastic, so he's drawing the GPO and it looks great and everything. But that sold enormously well. Apparently it's selling very well over the internet for them. They sold out the first run, you know, just went and went and went. And Ivan O'Brien, who was from O'Brien Press, this is published by O'Brien Press. O'Brien Press will also be at Squarebound, represented by at least Ivan O'Brien, if not others. And he has since then, I think on the back of that, they have various other plans to move forward. And they are sort of effectively Ireland's graphic novel publisher, Ireland's mainstream graphic novel publisher. And they've been talking to Al Nolan of Sancho, and he has a 5-book deal with them. I think he's doing a children's detective series, the name of which I do not remember. So I've seen some work from him. Anyway, the O'Brien Press will be there doing a panel as well, kind of to talking about that and what they've got coming out. And I think just generally about the, you know, how it all came about and how they dipped their toe in the water. Gerry Hunt, there will be a specific Gerry Hunt interview panel, which I'll probably do because I'm quite happy to get the opportunity to actually interview Gerry, and I know a bit about his work. So, Michael Carroll, who's an Irish author and has been doing various things and has published novels of various kinds, and so on, has recently had work published in 2000 AD, where he's been writing Judge Dredd, which is, I think, something of a childhood dream for him, you know. And I'm interested in the fact that he did a lot of fanzine work and he did a lot of this, and he kind of just slowly but surely, I think, made his way up to do the thing that he really wanted to do. So I'm kind of, that's a different aspect of, if you like, Irish comics. I mean, I don't see, let's say, I definitely don't see the small press, if that's not a derogatory term, but this, if the as being, you know, just a springboard for people to get elsewhere. It's completely valid in its own right, but sometimes people do move on, and it certainly, let's say, Gerry Hunt's own self-published work that brought him to the notice of O'Brien, who then kind of, I think they had a meeting, and he went in and they said, "Now, if you could do anything, what would you like to do?" And he said, "I'd kind of like to do the 1916 thing." And they said, "Good, because that's exactly what we wanted you to do." And so on. Gerry's a very ordinary, down-to-earth kind of guy. And he's kind of going, "I never dealt with so many people. Every time I went in, there was somebody else I was talking to." But, you know, he had any, you know, not used to working with an editor or anything either, you know. So, who else have I got? Alan Olin will be there, because he's working with, but both with representing his own work with Sancho and with O'Brien. I know I'm forgetting people. Comic Cast will be there.
Oh yes, I was like, should I say?
Did you mention? Yeah. The Instituto Cervantes have sent me along somebody whose name I've forgotten, because he has written a graphic novel, he's written and drawn a graphic novel based on James Joyce's Dubliners. So whereas this was meant to actually be just Irish people, I kind of went, well, they asked me, did I want the guy to come along? And I said, well, you know, it's good. Instituto Cervantes is a good name to have yourself associated with. And as it turns out, the event is on June the 18th. Remember that, folks. June the 18th in the Irish Writers' Centre. And June the 16th, as we all know, is Bloom's Day. It's the kind of the Dublin, particularly Dublin, celebration of James Joyce. So there seemed to be a certain, you know, I kind of said, well, there's a certain Irishness to the whole thing, you know, so I can let it slip in. And anyway, I make the rules so I can break them.
Do you think with the copyright up on Joyce's work, do you think there's any scope for comic adaptations?
That's a very interesting thing. And I know that Stephen Joyce, who's the grand nephew or whatever he is, has been particularly belligerent about, you know, keeping the lid on all the Joyce stuff. To the extent where he has made himself no friends, I think, and has, you know, yeah. So, yeah, I think, I mean, there's obviously people want to do something. I believe somebody is working on a graphic novel of, a graphic adaptation of Flann O'Brien's The Dawky Archive, oh, wow, perhaps. Now, or The Third Policeman. Third Policeman is the one I'd love to see done. Now, the thing is, I think he's doing this online and for free, but that is all still very much in copyright, because Flann died in 1966, so it will be. But I think there, this is another, actually, funny enough, another aspect of, if you like, Irish comics, that there are certain Irish works that would adapt very well. And one of the things I would love to do, my career as a comics creator is very much a fledgling one, having one 8-page story, or is it a 4-page story, in one of Alan Nolan's Sancho books. But there's a number of fascinating Irish murder cases from the past that I'd love to do. Now, I've spoken about this to Ivan O'Brien, and he kind of says, well, we're kind of going for the schools market here. And I kind of go, you know, not quite the Mamie Cadden, the famous Backstreet abortionist, is not going to be kind of what they're looking for. But however, that's you know, here and there. Now,
so the event is on
in the Irish Writers'
Centre
on Parnell Square. Hence, it's called Squarebound because comics are squarebound, and we are all square. It's a wonderful pun, folks. On the 18th of June.
What time does it start at?
Starting at 10, I think the doors will open at 9:30. The actual events start. We'll have one panel room where there'll be events running all day long, and that's all you need to know. There is an entrance fee of a fiver, which I think is reasonable, but I would. And I think that's everything you need to know.
All right. Well, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thanks very much for asking.
That was Porrick. We're the Comicast.
Squarebound
will be there.
Yeah, as we very briefly mentioned in that interview, that we're going to be there.
If you listen to this on release day, it's this weekend, the 18th, is it, of June?
Yes, and the thing kicks off. They're going to be letting people in at 9:30, as Porrick said there, but we're actually going to be on first thing at 10 a.m.
So if you could be there, that'd be actually the less people that are there, the better. As far as I'm concerned,
we're doing.
If there's a no show, that would be perfect.
We're just doing a little presentation, audio visual presentation,
yeah,
where we've asked some Irish comic
you
artists.
Don't spoil it all for them. They can come along at 10 o'clock
and see. Okay.
But it isn't just us. I think we can say safely that some of the biggest names in comics worldwide will be featured in this presentation. So
yes,
you should really,
as you've just heard by Porrick, who's mentioned them.
Oh, he knows who's in our presentation.
Oh, yeah, okay,
that's what I'm talking about. Not about it. And to be clear, that the people in our presentation aren't necessarily people who are attending Squarebound itself. So there's some surprises there.
Okay,
movie news or movies?
Movies.
You haven't seen X-Men yet, have you?
No,
you fucking knob.
I'm I actually hate all the X-Men movies, sure, thus far, like all of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I don't know. Is there any of them that is considered good?
X-Men 1 or 2 are considered good, but I agree with you in the sense that I don't think they're as good as everyone else thinks they are.
Yeah.
I think the core concept of the X-Men in that it's sort of a metaphor, I guess, for pretty much any kind of people who are different. You know,
yeah,
you
yeah, that
black
is,
people,
yeah,
or gay
that
people, or I don't mean. Oh, I said that like they're different. Gay people are different. Black people are different, but you know, people who feel like they're outcasts from
yes,
the remains.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's a solid concept.
Yeah, I'm keen to see this one,
sure,
if only because everyone says it's good,
mm,
and it's got an awesome new cast.
Yeah, I can confirm it's good. It's been a few weeks, so I'm pretty sure anyone who's been interested in seeing it has probably seen it already. But I won't
never
spoil
stopped
it.
You from spoiling it. Well,
I won't spoil too
famous
much.
Last word.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's great. The first half of the movie, or first half hour of the movie, is a lot of it's just Michael Fassbender as Magneto going around killing Nazis, which is pretty much what he did in Inglourious Basterds. So I'm down with that. Compared to the other X-Men movies, which are quite teenager focused, I felt this one was like more aimed at adults because it's all about like the Cuban Missile Crisis. Like, that's a huge part of the movies. They're pretty much trying to stop the Cuban Missile Crisis, you know, and a lot of it's about the Holocaust and Nazis and stuff. So it's definitely a more adult X-Men movie, although I'm not 100% on the rating. I assume it's still 12s or 15s because there's not blood around. There's not too many violent deaths, although there are some pretty great deaths, in particular when Magneto's killing those Nazis I mentioned. He does it quite effectively. He's quite effective as a Nazi hunter. And in fact, I know they were just going to make they were planning on making just a Magneto movie, and the script for this was partially a repurposed script from the Magneto movie they were making, so I'm pretty sure that's where the first half hour comes from. And it just makes you, I think everyone who's seen this has been just, I want a Magneto movie with Michael Fassbender just killing Nazis, and I agree 100%. James McAvoy as Professor X, or Charles Xavier as he's known in these early days, is, okay, sorry, on the off chance you don't know what the movie's about, it's the early days of the X-Men. Charles Xavier and Magneto are, they don't even know each other at the start. Sorry, Magneto isn't called Magneto, he's just Eric. And they become friends and form the X-Men. At the start, Charles Xavier, he's just he's like a student, and he's using his mind reading powers to like get ladies into bed and stuff. it's pretty great. And James McAvoy is brilliant in this. Everyone's been talking about Fassbender, but I think McAvoy is as good, if not better, as Charles Xavier. Brilliantly, because in the original, in the three X-Men movies previous, and not to say against Patrick Stewart, but he was chosen because he was bald. You know, like, and as soon as they're like, we'll make an X-Men movie, and Professor X is bald and is a wheelchair, Patrick Stewart. and James McAvoy was chosen for his acting ability rather than his hairline. So he straight away, I didn't think he'd work as Professor X, as I think a lot of people, but like within seconds, you're like, oh, he's got it. He's got this character down. And basically any scene that James McAvoy or Michael Fassbender in, particularly the scenes where they're on the screen together, are amazing. Everything else is sort of rubbish. But wisely, they've realised this in the edit, I think, and pretty much have cut down, like the other X-Men are barely featured. Thankfully, there's basically only in the last half hour where they're all sort of fighting the other evil X-Men, are they featured at all. So yeah, I really liked it. There's two great cameos, one very obvious one not so obvious one, both of which made me squeal with delight. I can't say any more except it is exceptional, except when Charles Xavier and Magneto are not on the screen, in which case at that point it's sort of mediocre, but still, like, hands down the best X-Men movie. I've seen him talk about a sequel, but it doesn't really lend. I don't know what you do in a sequel. It sort of sets in a very sort of Star Wars Episode 3 way. Everything in the last sort of 5 minutes, everything sort of that needs to happen to go into the first X-Men movie happens like very quickly. So I don't see a lot of room for a sequel. And actually, I think this might be a good time to point out that Matthew Vaughn just seems like a real prick. I've just been reading interviews with him where the original scriptwriters from Magneto were like, oh, we didn't get he didn't want to give us a script writing credit or something. And then he's just like, I basically rewrote the whole fucking thing. I can't believe those guys are even claiming that anything on it. So I'm a big Matthew Vaughn fan now. He's clearly he just thinks he's brilliant. And I think he's brilliant. So we agree on that. Other news, Green Lantern movie is coming out. And I just have a few words I'd like to say.
Sure.
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. For those who worship evil's might, something my power of Green Lantern's light. Yes, it's coming out and it's going to be amazing.
You think? The trailer doesn't grab me at all.
What's so great, I didn't want to say, when I heard Ryan Reynolds was making a Green Lantern movie, I was like, cut off my dick. That is the last thing I want from a Green Lantern movie. I fucking hate Ryan Reynolds. And then I was like, this is just going to be shit. They're going to get Megan Fox in as his love interest, and it'll just be the worst movie ever. But then the trailer comes out, and it's like, it's so ridiculous that, like, everything that you should cut from a Green Lantern movie, they've somehow left in and even magnified. You know, there's like that weird dude, like the chicken face, like alien, and the main bad guy, or like Sinestro's in there with his purple face and just looks stupid. And so they kept all the crazy space stuff, and that's what I love about the Green Lantern. So even I don't see how it'll do well, or if, like, I can't imagine kids are interested. But me is like a fucking Green Lantern nerd. Like, I'm just, this is everything I want. I want more space stuff. I want more crazy aliens. And it looks like they're delivering on that. So I'm actually like, yeah, because if I was making that movie, I would have not shown any space stuff in that trailer. It would have been him on the Earth fighting, you know, that dude with the big head, and you know, buildings falling and stuff. And there's a bit of that in the trailer, but I would have left out all the crazy aliens. Yeah, but apparently they're in, and they're a big part. So I'm actually super psyched about that. Except, of course, the Ryan Reynolds. Fucking, I hate him so. I hate him so much. Every time he gets a role, Jason Lee is not getting a role. And Jason Lee would be
better. What was that movie he was in? He was in, it was like an indie movie where he played a superhero that was kind of like an invisible friend to this like guy who was having problems.
I don't watch Ryan Reynolds movies as sort of a rule, so I'm not familiar with that one, to be honest. So I'm super psyched about that. Obviously, by the time our next podcast is out, it'll be on, and I'll have seen it multiple times in 2D.
yeah, I'll review the 3D version.
Sure. Did you want to talk about The Walking Dead at all? Or?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just going to say, yes. Yeah, so The Walking Dead obviously started on Irish television screens. I'm sure you've all downloaded it to criminal masterminds.
It was also on the other channels as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. but anyway, the DVD release is out.
It's actually cheap, isn't it? It wasn't cheap
when I bought it. Yeah. It was like 30 quid.
Yeah, it's cheap enough for a DVD series.
Is it?
I don't know. If I buy a movie, if I buy fucking Iron Man or Iron Man 2 on DVD when it comes out, it's 30 quid. This is a 6-hour TV series.
Anyway, so yeah, the full, you know, great series one is there. There's loads of special features. Sure. They're not like just shit thrown together. There's a really awesome one on the to show you how to like look like a zombie, but a zombie particularly from The Walking Dead, and using stuff that you can, you know, buy like in a supermarket and stuff, and it looks really great.
Sure.
So we need to do that.
Yeah.
There's a really good making of, like a really good making of, you know, with Robert Kirkman, you know, talking through the whole process, and the director
Frank Darabont
talking about it, and it's fascinating. It's one of those, you know, like, you know the way sometimes they throw together these making ofs, but this is actually a really interesting one that takes in you know, all facets of the making of the show.
Why don't you tell me about the show? What's your opinion on it? Because have you watched the entire series?
Yeah, I love it.
Sure. Your opinion? Oh, I thought it was an amazing piece of work. What was your opinion? Maybe we can dance around the spoilers here on the last episode.
Yes. I don't think we need to dance around it. I think if you want to skip this part, because frankly, if you're not reading The Walking Dead or if you're not watching
the TV
series,
and this part
isn't
in the comic book, this is the big part of the difference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when it gets to the last episode and they get to the
sort of research facility
virus place, I was a bit amazed.
Yeah.
First of all, because I thought like maybe this seems like the last episode after maybe 4 seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I was delighted. I loved the whole awesome futuristic place. I loved the guy that actor who was playing the scientist. The only thing that was shit about that episode was the mammoth, ridiculous looking explosion of for a series that looked so great and looked like a film and a movie throughout the whole thing. They had like the worst explosion, and actually in the DVD they show like, you know, the making of this explosion, and it's brilliant. They just show like they filmed one explosion or two explosions, and then they're just talking about how they've like pasted them all together. I'm like, yeah, like, well, like, don't be proud of that. It clearly looks like that's what you've done. All these explosions, superimposed them on top of each other, and used them in several different shots for varying sizes as well. That kind of annoyed me a bit. So, but it was sort of great. I think it summed up The Walking Dead a lot, because, you know, they've got to this virus facility that is, you know, it's gonna be the savior, but then it doesn't, and that whole plan falls down, and they're just back to, you know, so it actually sums up The Walking Dead quite good.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of people didn't like it, but I think mainly people who read the comic and are like, this isn't in the comic, therefore it's stupid. I did a really sort of that voice start to insult those people personally. I actually really liked the idea that they go to the one place that could save them, and then that's it, and not, so they literally have no hope. Going into the next series, like, there's nothing they can do.
Well, on that, the director, what's his name?
Frank Darabont.
Frank. Was saying that like they're gonna follow roughly the comic book, but like in the first series they will take different paths to get there. But
I mean, the next place they go in the comic book is sort of a housing estate where they think they're safe, but they aren't. And like, there's no reason they can't straight away just go from there to that, or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, I loved it. It's like some sort of continuing version of The Road.
Yeah.
You know, only with zombies.
It's absolutely amazing. Or make a TV show The Road. I don't know if any going to watch that. People weren't willing to watch the movie. Like, oh, another hour of fucking depressing bullshit. I love this show. I like The Road. It's a great movie, but like, yes. I don't really want to watch it again. Right. Continue on from The Walking Dead and segueing smoothly into the news. The Walking Dead Season 2 is airing in Germany this October.
Was that the earliest they...
That's the only place it's been announced so far. But presumably, the original series aired in America in October as well of last year, so around Halloween. So I presume it's going to be the same thing this year. Apparently the budget has been cut significantly. I saw an interview of Frank Darabont where he's like, yeah, the budget's been cut. That isn't going to make the show better.
Yeah.
It's going to make it worse. But I don't know about the specifics on how much it was.
Well, more great, actually, special features is they have got like the executives from...
AMC, is it?
Yeah, talking about the show, and it keeps cutting back to him saying, you know, like, you know, and then that when we had to like chop up the body, and I was expecting, you know, they're going to look at this and they're going to ask for cuts and stuff, yep. And they send it back and there's no cuts, and we're like, yes, yes.
Awesome. Also, I've sort of announced recently, there's a Walking Dead video game coming out, done by the guys Telltale, who do the Sam and Max games. So it's like a sort of an adventure game type thing. It's got a completely new story, not based on the books or the TV show, okay. Just a new character in sort of another part of the world. But it's a concept that suits that pretty well. Other news. Yeah, I've written the DC renumbering thing. I said we'd talk about that a little bit. Obviously, I think we can get into it in more detail perhaps when it happens. We're closer to the time.
Yeah.
But as we kind of mentioned earlier, DC are relaunching all their books at the end of Flashpoint number 5, which drops in September, I believe. And every one of their books will now have a new number 1. They're also casting some books and merging some books and creating some new books, all of which will have a new number 1 issue. And I just wrote down, they've sort of announced all of them, and I just wrote down a few ones that I'm pretty excited about that sound pretty good. Justice League, issue 1, written by Jeff Johns, who wrote Flashpoint, as I mentioned earlier, and art and cover by Jim Lee and Scott Williams. So Jim Lee has drawn this bitch. I can confirm that Jim Lee has drawn at least some of this. I say some of this because any Jim Lee book that he draws fully takes about a year to come out per issue. And we're like, there still hasn't, it's been 18 months since the last issue of Batman, or All-Star Batman and Robin, I think, maybe even longer. Wonder Woman issue 1, written by Brian Azzarello and art by Cliff Chiang, who I don't know who Cliff Chiang is, but Brian Azzarello, he wrote 100 Bullets and the Joker miniseries and the Luther miniseries, and his stuff is kind of hit or miss, but always interesting at least. I always has a good idea. He did this weird Superman comic once with Jim Lee, where Superman's talking to a priest and then he fights the Earth. Yes. Yeah, it was alright. Action Comics number 1, Action Comics being the Superman comic, written by Grant Morrison, art by Rags Morales and Rick Bryant, other artists I'm not familiar with, to be honest. Grant Morrison has said he wants to do a Superman comic back in the old days when like Superman was just lifting cars and stuff like that was amazing, you know, and that the world didn't love him. So from the sort of description I've read of this, that this is that, where it's just sort of, it said tales of Superman, of the old era Superman. So that sounds actually excellent. Grant Morrison did All-Star Superman, which is basically the same thing, where it's it would like be one issue stories of Superman just in crazy situations, and that was probably one of the best comic books ever made. So I'm really excited about that. Again, I should look up these guys who are doing the art. I'm not familiar with them. Detective Comics number 1, written by Tony S. Daniel, art by Tony S. Daniel, Detective Comics being Batman. Tony S. Daniel did the art on Grant Morrison's run for quite a while, and he wrote some Batman comics before, which I haven't read, but by all accounts are all right. So that's pretty cool. Batman: The Dark Knight number 1, another Batman comic written by David Finch, art by David Finch and Richard Friend. David Finch is an amazing artist. I don't know if he's ever written anything before, so that would be interesting. Maybe he has. If anyone knows, please let me know. I'd be interested. And finally, Green Lantern number 1, written by Jeff Johns, art by Doug Mankey. I love that name. Christian Allamy. Again, just Green Lantern. I would like him to suck me off with his ring. If there's anything I can do to support the Green Lantern franchise, especially sexually, let me know.
I'll mention this on the next show. Maybe we'll talk about it. But if you go into Forbidden Planet right now, you can get for free Dave Hendricks' Short, Sharp, Schlock, which is a little comic with it's your favorites. Is like there's cover by
all my favorites.
Yeah, the cover has like art from Stephen Mooney, Stephen Thompson, Will Slaney, and Shalvey, and it's colored by Jordi Belair. And yes, anyway, I'll talk about it a little bit more next time when I'm more prepared.
Yeah, when you've got time to read an 8-page comic in a month. I just wanted a piece of news which I missed there. And Brian Wood's comic Nordlanders, which is this awesome sort of Viking comic, Vertigo comic by DC, has been cancelled in its prime by DC. I don't know if it's part of this sort of this restructuring relaunch thing, but it's only got 8 issues left or something, and it's done. But I just wanted to tell people they should be reading Nordlanders, and shame on you for not buying it every month. You've ruined my life. Yeah, that's all the news I've got. I had one other piece of news, but I've forgotten and I didn't write it down. So the listeners will just have to go unaware. The internet's full of news. You gotta take your pick. Go to a comic book site, pick a news story, pretend it was that one.
Okay, we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Oh yeah,
with something from Squarebound. We might record some of the panels, or we might do something.
Try and put up our presentation, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, we shouldn't say that, because then less people will come. Or maybe we should.
Anyways, so we'll see you.
If you come and you want a copy of Gazebo signed, like bring your copy of Gazebo, Liam will sign it for you happily. I know you've all been dying for it.
We'll also be signing 5x5 glossy black and white photos of ourselves.
Also, I'll sign any comic you bring me. I'll even do like the signature as the writer, like the Jeff Johns. I'm really good at faking signatures, so I'll do that. That's a service I provide.
Right.
So yeah, if you're at Squarebound, come say hi. You can check us out at twitter.com/thecomiccast. We're also on Facebook.
Yeah, we've got a new page actually that we've never mentioned before. So yeah, just type it in. Look for the page, not the group, because the group is going to be deleted once I figure out how to do that.
Sure, I think it's just up at the top. Yeah, that's it. Check us out. Please leave a comment. You can review us on iTunes if you like. We've only got 2 reviews. One of them was me. So, Baldo, if you're going to bring down the average, don't bother. At the moment, we're a 5-star podcast on iTunes, so we're pretty proud of that. Yeah, we'll see you at Squarebound in a week, and if not, in a podcast in 2 weeks. Have at you. State 5.